Good morning. Yes, we made it. Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the usual Friday morning session of the Database Working Group. I'm Wilfried Weber from Vienna University and the Austrian National Research and Education Network. I'm trying to keep this session on track and to make us finish as soon as possible. We do not have too many things on the agenda today, but let's start with the more administrative matters. To introduce a couple of other people, for those of you who have not been around for a longer time, over there is Nigel Titley, who is one of the two co-chairs of this working group, and you are going to be introduced to Paul Polsey from RIBE-NCC, giving the update about the database activities today. So for the logistics, I'd like to extend my thanks again to Nigel Titley, who offered to take notes. The other thing to mention here is that we really invite you to participate and not sort of to just listen in on what Nigel, myself, Paul is going to present, but please be active and join in. If you do that, please walk up to the microphones and state your name. That's the minimum we ask you to do. You are also welcome and invited to give your affiliation, organization, or function you are speaking for. We also have remote participation, which is taken care of by our colleagues from the RIBE-NCC. Okay, over there. Thank you. The next thing to do, business formalities, is to agree on the agenda for this meeting. I have circulated a minor update yesterday for the draft agenda, so we are draft agenda version 2. Is there anyone who wants to propose any modifications to that? Additions, resequencing, not talking about some stuff maybe? No? Okay, then this is the agenda we are going to work from today. And the next action actually is to formally approve the minutes from the previous meeting in Dubai. Minutes have been circulated on the list. The draft minutes have been available from the working group webpage. So is there any amendment you want to make? Any comment? No? So the Dubai meeting minutes have been approved by that. And we ask the RIBE-NCC together with Nigel to actually modify the status of the minutes from draft to final. Next thing to do is to review the action list. And I'd like to invite Nigel to walk us through the list of open and completed actions.
Just in case. I'm only going to be here for a couple of minutes. Ah, there we go. Right, action item review. The birthday background is because some of these actions are coming into their second year now, so it's happy birthday, dear actions. Okay. Although, actually, we haven't got that many, so that's actually quite good. 54.1, RIBE-NCC, maintainer attribute on all objects. Will Paul be dealing with that later? Right, okay. Clean up of orphaned objects. Paul dealing with that later. RIBE-NCC, removal of rev serve attribute. Dealing with that later, right. And we're doing well here. RIBE-NCC, add MNT IRT to the LR portal. It's done, is it? Oh, wow, right. Okay, well, that one can be put to bed then. And then there's an action on the Data Protection Task Force. Do we have a representative from the Data Protection Task Force here? Okay. Do you know whether anything was done on this one? No, we suspect not. Okay, so this one's ongoing. Yes, that's just a consideration. And then finally, 57.1, from the last meeting, implement AS Plane, which I think is definitely done, and you'll be dealing with that later. That's it. Look at that, nice and quick.
Thank you. Thank you, Nigel. And thus, I'd like to invite Paul to give the usual traditional RIPE database activity statistics presentation. And as we said already, within that presentation, we are going to have also information related to some open actions and to the database. Database. It's too early in the morning to be that early in the morning. also with regard to the data protection, data privacy task force. So, Paul, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I'm Paul Paulsen, the database manager since January this year, and I will be giving you the database update today. I'd like to first of all start with an introduction to the database group and then talk you through the action points that we took away from previous RIPE meetings and some statistics and operational data. And we've had a data protection task force meeting this week, and I'd like to give you some highlights that we took away from that meeting. And obviously after that, there's time for questions. The database group, for you who haven't seen previous meeting slides, here we are. And hi, guys. So who are stakeholders in the database department? We obviously have the RIPE community via the various working groups. And internally, we have the IT department, business applications, DNS, resource registration services, and customer services. And we also have legal and law enforcement stakeholders. So, action points. Maintaining, making maintainers mandatory on role and person objects. And this was action point 54.3. We find that this hasn't seen enough action to our liking, but that's because it has a slightly bigger effect than anticipated, especially in the area of documentation and some procedure changes that need to be coordinated within RIPE departments. There's also some progress to report. We've done the code changes necessary. And when we've finished the documentation part, then we are actually able to deploy our code changes. And we've also added a new bootstrapping page for new users that allows them to easily create their first person and maintainer. I would suggest, as a little note, to before we roll this out, to check if you have written any scripts that automatically generate objects to make sure that once we roll out our changes that your scripts don't stop working. And we'll try to deploy all that as soon as possible after this meeting. And this is that startup page. I think previous meeting there was still a prototype stamp on there, but we've done the work for it. There's been some talk, and I didn't want to leave that out, about data quality, and this is a RIPE-wide initiative, and obviously the database team is also part of that effort. And we would basically like to know if we can still reach all the maintainers of the objects in our database. And we are planning, and this I want to emphasize as a well-coordinated effort, we would like to mail out the maintainers and see if they are still responsible for the objects that we have in our database. If you receive such email, you can help us by responding to it. Action point 54.7, the reverse server deprecation, attribute deprecation on INET and INET6NUM objects. About 2 weeks ago, we've announced that we would roll out the syntax changes, or the software that enforces the syntax changes, to give you a bit of time to look at your scripts again that still use RefServer attributes. So please change those scripts, and we think in about 2 weeks' time we will roll out these changes, and from that moment onwards we won't be accepting RefServer attributes on INET and INET 6 NUM objects anymore. You could, in the meantime, whenever you need to make updates, decide to even remove the attribute or change it into a remark line. What, either way, what has your preference? And then before the next RIPE meeting, we will be running scripts to deprecate the remaining attributes on these objects. Cleaning up unreferenced person objects. Action point 54.6. We've started to delete these objects in batches. We started off with very tiny batches to see if we got any feedback, and slowly on increased these batch sizes. And we've deleted approximately a little bit over 120,000 objects so far. And we're planning to increase the batch size so that we've removed all these objects before the next RIPE meeting. However, we will be keeping this script running so that any object, person or role object that remains in the database and remains unreferenced for a period up to 21 days will be automatically removed from the database. If you need your unreferenced person object to remain in our database, then we recommend you to contact one of the RIPE working group chairs, and they can add you to what we call the white pages. And obviously those objects won't be removed. ASDOT to ASPlain migration, we did that on the 25th of March, and it was quite a smooth action there. And we found that altogether about exactly 184 objects were affected in some way. Okay. Last RIPE meeting, we promised to come back with some feedback on and an approach on mirroring. This was, what I understand, quite a heated discussion last meeting. So we promised to do some homework here, and I would like to start with others mirroring the RIPE database. As an example, we've looked at RADB that mainly, or I think, only mirrors our routing data, and found that they are nearly, aside from I think one known object, they are completely in sync with what's in the RIPE database. This doesn't include personal data, and because we are transforming all moving everyone who's using our NRTM streams to personless NRTM streams that don't contain any personal data. For instance, RADB service won't suffer in any way from this. Then we obviously also have us mirroring other databases, and we understand that mirroring is important to you, especially if it's if we represent the data in RPSL format. We've looked at how can we improve the data that we maintain, and we basically have to see what we get in. We also need to match up some discrepancies between the schemas of the different objects that we get back, and hope to, from that moment, if when we've assessed that, then we can look at how we can improve the data that we're holding. Various updates. In previous meetings, we've showed you some plans around improving our system architecture. Well, we've done most of the work. This new architecture is based on clustered hardware, and which would give us a zero data loss in case of we're holding data in two physical locations, so there wouldn't be any data loss in case of failure. It would obviously improve resilience and facilitate possible growth. And we, again, this is something that we're at on the point of deploying, and this will, I am confident that I could present something in the next RIPE meeting in this regard. Various updates again. We upgraded our, or maybe finally upgraded our GNU PG to a new version that allows you to use newer hashing algorithms. And some fun facts are that we've introduced a new, slightly better way of working with project management. It's an agile software development practice called Scrum, and we're using two weekly sprints. And obviously, once we've deployed our new hardware infrastructure, it gives us a better platform to think about future enhancements and improvements. Some operational data. This is the customer service team that sits on the other end of the email messages that you send and get back. And they obviously take care of the first line support. They will escalate any tickets to the database department, and we function as a second line for them. Some stats on tickets. The blue line is what's between 56 and 57, RIPE meeting 56 and 57, and orange 57, 58. And we see a nice decline. The notification issues, I could note there was a technical reason for that high level, or the high number of tickets, so we've addressed that, and we can we would see a further decrease in that area. RIPE database statistics. Who is queries per minute? Basically, I've taken the stats that we showed previously at the end of January 2008. We were at about 4,000 queries a minute. And the blue line you see on top of there is a whole year of queries April to April, and we see a nice increase. And there's a little orange line there as well, and that's our IPv6, our queries over IPv6. And actually, it's not so bad. It's approximately 1% over that 1 year of queries we get in over IPv6, a little bit less than 1%. How do you query us? We see that proxy queries are actually less popular these days. I will come back to proxying a little bit later in my presentation as well. Some stats on where are queries coming from, and a question we often get is how do you generate these stats? Well, we use GeoIP for this, and these are not domain extensions, but just country codes. The slices that don't have percentages with it range between 3% and 2%, I think. Queries per month, and so in web terms, stickiness of our queries. There's quite a lot of ad hoc queries. Only 1 to 10 queries per unique IP address is most popular, and then it goes up to 100 to 1,000 queries. Only 2% of queries come back more regularly. Updates, statistics. This is running over a six-week period. This is running at approximately 2 successful queries a minute. And we've had seen peaks of 30 a minute, which we can easily handle. How do we receive our queries? 23% over email and 77% via our sync updates. There's various interfaces into that sync update, so that's all represented by this blue area. 67% are successful results, have successful results. And this is also what we based our previous queries statistics on. And 24% fails for some reason. And we mark 9% as spam. 0%, it's a very small amount, still request help via our update methods. You actually receive an email back with help data in there. And then uptime. Last meeting we presented nice figures, 5 9s. This meeting, my first meeting, I have to report a slight dip in mail updates. But the good news is that this was a glitch in the monitoring system that we found after doing updates. We fixed that. So if we didn't take that into account, that line would be nice and flat. Okay, the highlights from the Data Protection Task Force. So I'm just going to tell you what came out of that, and maybe during question time you can give us some feedback on some of the items. So in light of not reusing NIC handles, we came up with an idea to stick to letting you choose that two-character prefix. And we will just automatically generate the sequence number behind that. We've also taken an action point from this meeting. And what we would like to do is to see what the impact would be if we enforced the rule that the maintainer needs to authenticate a request to have their persons object connected with a resource that's managed by a different entity. You could think that, you know, if we enforce this rule, that maybe people would start duplicating person objects just to work around this system. So we need to go back, look at that, and see what we can propose. Proxying, I promise you to come back on that. The task force was looking at the terms and conditions, and you know there's still quite a few proxy agreements, and we were looking at how can we make sure that the queries that or the results that are presented via these proxies also adhere to the terms and conditions. And in that light, we thought, well, how many people or how many queriers are there, or how many users of our proxy service are there around? We've done some, we've looked into this, and we found this week actually that there's 89 proxy agreements currently, of which 28 have queried the database this year, of which actually only 18 actually used the proxy service. So they actually provided the right command line parameters to make a query a proxy query. So the question is this something that we should continue to provide? I think this gets us to the question time.
Okay. So, yeah, thank you very much for this presentation. May I ask you to go back a couple of slides with regard to the Data Protection Task Force updates, because I think we, based on the data you gave us, we should actually sort of ask the community about the input. So the first one... I don't mind which sequence, either from the last one.
Let's start with the first one.
So this this is something which we would like to ask you to think about and to come back with input. The idea here is that we would not allow in the future that you explicitly select a particular nick handle any longer. What the idea is that you could still select the character prefix of the nick handle. I think most of you know how they look. They may be ABC dash, no, it's ABC and then a couple of numbers, a couple of figures, dash ripe. So what you can actually, and even in that, after that proposal might get implemented, you could still sort of get these vanity character combinations, but just for the prefix, just for the characters. And the numerals, the sort of sequence number, beyond these two, between two up to four characters, these numbers would be assigned by the robot. And if this number, a particular number, has been used once and the object has been deleted, then nobody would be actually be able to use the same sequence number with that particular character combination. That's the basic idea. What we would like to find out here is if anyone has scripting machinery or internal management programs in place which might be affected by that. Okay, so Peter?
Peter Koch. Yeah, Wilfried, I would just like to add the a bit of reasoning behind that. And there was that not only would nobody be able to manually reassign these, but they would also no longer be automatically reassigned by the RIPE database when you leave out these. And the reasoning behind that was, or one of that, external references into the RIPE database. So people using RIPE nick handles in their customer database, for example, so to avoid clashes there. And that's the point where you ask for the external scripting, right?
Yeah, thank you, Peter. That's exactly the background. Thanks for clarification. So does anyone think that he or she or it, the program, would be affected by that change? No? Okay, that looks like we would be safe, more or less safe to do that. And the other thing, okay, sorry.
Wilfried, I don't expect problems here. However, well, okay, I have some doubts that we can take safe conclusions from the representation of a user base here.
And, of course.
On other things, actually, taking care in our procedures that we do not break existing stuff actually should be taken much more serious than in the past.
Yeah, I get that, and sort of this is not the final decision. We wanted to test the waters here, and as there is no big opposition, I think we go ahead with investigate a little bit into more detail, like what it would affect, and as usual, we would come forward with a proposal how to implement it. Okay. Shane?
Shane Kerr, ISC. Actually, I was going to sit down and let this go, but I'd like to speak against being too careful, because as we've seen in the past with these sort of migrations, people don't update their scripts until the changes have been made. So rather than, I think historically using a long, careful process doesn't actually improve the situation for users. So I would say I think this is a fantastic idea. Just go ahead and do it as soon as possible.
Dennis Walker, RIPE-NCC. While we're on the subject of nick handles, there is another situation which we would like you to consider and give us some guidance on. We get asked more and more these days, people who want a nick handle in the RIPE database to use in someone else's database, and we're expected to manage these not orphan nick handles because they never exist, they're never used in the RIPE database, but people just want to create them there and then use them somewhere else. And the question is whether we should actually allow the RIPE database to be used as a repository for other databases.
Yeah, or the other way around. Sort of some of us having, or have had in the past a nick handle, for example, in the ARIN database, and it was very handy to use exactly the same handle in the RIPE database or in some other database.
George Michelson from APNIC. I'm very hesitant to speak at this issue because I'm not in region, and I think these aspects of data management ultimately go to the behaviours that your direct membership want. But I I'd like to make a more general observation that the public good, the public benefit of Whois, is the public-facing query side. The management aspects are essentially a private good that reflect the ease that your membership have to perform update operations. And although I value the RPSL Whois, RIPE Whois Code Nexus immensely, it has been hugely valuable to us. I sometimes think that this whole referential integrity thing, that you have the authorization framework inside Whois, is probably more of a hindrance than a help. And I think what you are doing here is good, and it's improving your management aspects. But at some point, would the database group consider reconsidering this model and perhaps externalizing all of these issues into other update mechanisms? Because something here just feels wrong about the complexity of this kind of management process and considerations of what you do or don't allow and cross-member authorization and all of these things. It's getting very complicated.
Yeah, indeed, it is complicated.
But it's not to say you're wrong. It's just the observation. This is starting to feel like it's an additional complexity on the design of something whose public good is immense. But this aspect of data management is really a slightly different thing.
Obviously, we would love to spend all our time on looking at a new platform and working on new stuff. However, we also have to maintain the existing stuff. So obviously, that's one of my various points was we are thinking about something new, and we want to really think this through. And while we do that, we will have to maintain the system.
Yeah, George, would you sort of, as a speaker for the APNIC region, for APNIC, would you be interested to join in such discussions? Because I guess you are using a very similar code like we do here in this region, so.
Well, to be brief and not monopolize time at your microphone, I think there is a convergence of interest across all the registries. The ARIN meeting, for instance, had a breakout meeting that was discussing changes in provisioning relating to their SWIP activity. And it's quite clear that technology has moved on from where it was 5-10 years ago, and many, many people now have RESTful or other management provisioning systems. Mm. And There is a sense that we have a shared issue here. So yes, I wouldn't say myself, but I'm sure we would love to talk to you. And you're right, of course you must maintain your current investment, and this is an entirely appropriate activity. I don't mean to say don't do this. Sorry.
Okay. Yep.
Okay, thank you. So I think you are going to hear from our end. Shane?
Hi, this is Shane again. Well, George, I respectfully disagree that this is complicated. I think the changes that have been going on the database throughout its history have actually all been simplifications. While in principle this sounds like more complicated than just pick what you want and stick it in the database, in practice it has a lot of good properties, and I think it's actually not a complicated mechanism. It's just fixing some implications of lack of design and lack of really thinking about. I mean, the problems the RIPE database solves, it solves, and there were immediate needs, so there wasn't much thought given to kind of future sticky issues about referential integrity and this kind of nonsense. But at some point, you do have to think about it. So, and I don't think it's too complicated. So, I think it's a totally appropriate level of a change in complication and things like that. So,
yeah, but I take the point that it might. Sorry. No, I take the point that it's probably about time to do another sanity check, whether the stuff that we have been doing for the last 5, 6, 7 years is still appropriate, or whether there is room for improvement. Okay, so thanks for the feedback to all of you. Could we please go to the next slide? Yeah, just to give you a little bit of background, the only difference between a regular query and this proxy query on the technical level actually is that you are able to register the IP address of your client querying the database, and that IP address would be exempt from the throttling and blocking mechanisms which are in place to prevent data harvesting. So the functionality of the query is almost the same or identical to a regular query, but you are allowed sort of to throw lots and lots of queries without getting trapped by the data mining or data harvesting prevention mechanism. Mm. And the question here really is whether this has any reasonable use these days or in the future. And there is George queuing at the microphone again.
George Michelson, regular manager of systems which perform proxy service queries on your engine. This is immensely valuable to us, immensely. And on behalf of the queries from my region, I thank you for your continued desires and assistance in that regard. We love the fact that we don't have to be subject to your limits, and it makes it much easier for us to offer all-encompassing WHOIS services.
Okay, thank you for that feedback. That was actually what we were hoping to hear, that someone actually tells us why and how. Okay, thanks for this feedback. Rüdiger?
And well, okay, even without looking at the precise function of proxy server, I think if there are limits implemented, there is actually a need for having exemption rules. So, well, okay, whether it's proxy and, it doesn't really count a lot whether, say, my regular procedures, which are doing bulk queries, but not for proxy service, but really for using the data in regular stuff, when that reaches the limit, well, okay, I want to have an exemption, so it should stay there.
Yeah. Well, actually, if I remember correctly, that mechanism that's a slightly different mechanism, and that is in place too. So you can actually talk to the IPNCC and ask them to lift the limit or to at least increase the limit. What this one actually does is that it includes the real client's IP address into the query string, so it's sort of our database then being able to still look at the original IP address and apply the same throttling mechanisms. But the throttling is not applied to the IP address of the proxy server, but it's applied to the end user. Did I get that correct?
I think you did.
Yeah, yes. Okay. So I think we get the feedback that it's useful to sort of still offer that service. And that's about it. And the next slide, please.
I think this was
it. Was the last one?
Oh, wait, hold on. We have the second item on this. Was a research item for us.
Yeah, okay.
So that was the data protection task force highlights. Basically.
Yep. So, again, any comments to this report, Peter? No, okay. Yep.
Hi, Riccardo Loselli. Sorry if it's the wrong place to ask. It's my first meeting. So I would like to know if there is any plan for ASU's implementation of IPv6 queries. ASU's now is giving report for IPv4 assignments and allocation only, as far as I know, at least.
Maybe I can ask Dennis to give some feedback on that.
Well, ASU's isn't actually managed by the database group. Okay. It's a tool which is managed by my business applications department. I'm not sure there's anyone here who could actually speak about that right now. But we can pass the message on and see what feedback comes back.
Okay, thank you.
I'd actually like to take it a little step further. Could we please register an action item for the NCC, whoever picks it up, whether it's being picked up then by this group or the other group, but could we please have an action item to investigate what's missing? Okay, Peter Koch?
Yeah, Peter Koch, DNIC. Paul, could you please go back to that slide where you presented the RefServe stuff? Well, that's more or less half the presentation, sorry. Okay, good. So thank you for making good progress on that. The announcement that went out those 2 weeks ago, I wasn't so sure is the plan to actively approach the individual maintainers of those objects, or was that to be the general announcement only? The reason I ask is, and I'm partly guilty of this thing, coming to this when I had to dig through ancient data and actually use the stuff that was in the RefServe attributes. These are probably very old objects and slightly in an unmaintained state, maybe, some of them. So how would you make sure that the maintainers or maintainers of the time really get hold of this, because they might not read the database working group announcements?
Actually, I think the original plan was not to delete the attribute as such, but change it into a remark line.
Okay.
So we'd just say remark colon and then the original attribute. However, on the we received also messages hinting towards why, I mean, if you're just turning this yet into another remark, why not just completely remove it? So we're not going to email all the maintainers of these objects and ask them to look at their objects. That's not currently in the plan. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you think there is, Peter, do you think there is a point in actively trying to contact those people? Because this is really very, very old stuff.
Exactly.
It was not used in any way or fashion over I don't know how many years, but quite a few. So my personal take on that one would be that it's more appropriate to silently do away with that during phase three. And there was a proposal circulated, I think it was Dennis, circulating the proposal of these three phases. So phase one, where you get sort of warnings, then no longer accepted. And third phase, if you haven't reacted by then, we are going to walk through the database and simply throw those stale attributes away without converting them to remarks. Because if you want to keep the information, you are invited to do so on your own during phase two.
That brings us to another interesting issue. So approaching the maintainers, I guess you're right, and I would have expected lots of bounces and stuff, but still I just wanted to have this clarified, and from my perspective, that sounds reasonable. The other question, whether or not to keep the information and change it to remarks or not, I'm actually split here. From a purist's point of view, I would agree with you, delete these stale attributes and have this a clean thing. Having gone through this interesting task of gathering information on very old assignments and very old objects, the information in there has been kind of helpful indirectly to find pointers to who back at that time was responsible. Like, oh, I recognize the name of this name server, which has been out of service for the last maybe 12 years or so, but since the rest of the information in the object might also have been very, imprecise, in some rare cases, the RefServe attribute gave some additional insight. So from that perspective, I'd support keeping that as a remark, knowing that that is not the clean way.
Yeah, but that's, you know, okay, that's good input. Just to have another hint, maybe whom to talk to find out what the, yeah, okay, I get it.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, I think then we are done with this presentation,
okay,
with the summary. Thanks again, Paul.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is a thing that I have put in. Unfortunately, I was not able to attend the previous meeting in Dubai, so I slightly got out of sync with regard to IRR toolset. And could you please do the agenda? The thing here is that we were talking AS Plane and some other stuff, and AS Plane does have an impact on the tools, on some of the tools actually consuming AS number information. And my guys back home alerted me that the IRR toolset might not be very aggressively maintained these days. So first of all, I'd like to find out how many of us are actually using the IRR toolset or a subset of that on a sort of daily basis. Okay, that's just a few, but still, this is database and not routing and not operations here. So what's your feeling about the maintenance quality of IRR toolset? Because the background is that a while ago, originally it was designed and implemented in the framework of the Routing Arbiter project, then the RIPE-NCC inherited the maintenance of the IRR toolset, then it went to the Internet Software Consortium because we thought they would do a much better job than the RIPE-NCC. And just recently, if my information is correct, the ISC moved this thing to maintained by the community. And my worries actually is who is the community, because this is very opaque. Shane?
Hi, I'm the person who actually did most of that moving and things like that. There is, well, as of the last 3 days, a website that's not up, but once we get the figure out what's wrong with the host and get it back up, there is a website which is mostly a development website, but it also includes a wiki and things like that, and it has a set of patches that have been merged and some that have not been merged. Which provide a number of fixes and functionality and things like that. So if you are planning on using the IRR toolset, I recommend you check out the latest code from Subversion. There's a good chance that you might have problems compiling on your system or have parse bugs and things like that that have been fixed. The intention was to wait for a couple of fixes before putting out the next official release. And one of those is the 32-bit ASN support. I don't know actually if the patch has been submitted, but there were some issues that the authors of the patch and some of the other people on the mailing list were discussing before they declared it final. I think that's still the case. If you want to give it a try, the patch is available and something that you can download and attempt to use. I don't know if that's with ASPlain or if that's with the dot notation.
But is there anyone or any organization sort of trying to coordinate that effort? Or is it just whoever wants to do it is fine, but nobody's going to do it in the end?
Right, so the plan was to, because ISC frankly doesn't use the software, and they don't. Their community is mostly, you know, it's an open source company, so it provides open source solutions. But the most of it's not really their normal customer base, the IRR toolset group. So there are some people who actively participate on the mailing list, the people who generate these patches and things like that. It is no one's full-time job. I'm taking the responsibility to do minor administrative work on the wiki and things like that, but to be honest, I don't have the time or the interest, and I don't think anyone does, to do active maintenance on this software.
Rüdiger?
Rüdiger Volk, Deutsche Telekom. Let me give a view from the user side. During the time when ISC was formally fully responsible, there was a long time where it essentially was dead. There was actually a user community in the background that was doing patches, but the patches didn't actually get integrated, and since the ISC activity was very low, those persons, we don't really know whether they pushed all patches up. So the move over to the open software community supported thing in fact is a better basis for getting things done. Of course it depends to a large extent on who is contributing what resources, and for my own organization the things turned out to be really bad timing, because the guy who had been doing lots of work for me, which we unfortunately haven't yet integrated disappeared about at the moment when the open software platform became available. But I think the current situation is much better than before, if my colleagues from our IT branch of business would start to discuss with me whether this is a reliable and tenable basis for production software, I would have a really hard time to win an argument.
Okay, thank you, Rüdiger. So is there any feeling that it might make sense to ask the RIPNCC again to sometimes have a look at this community-maintained thingy? Not taking over the responsibility, because that's not the point I'm trying to make. I'm feeling uneasy if you rely on a community which doesn't have any structure and any guide dog. Because
it's strange that you would say that at a RIPE meeting, but...
Do you think we would have a meeting without me standing there and coming up with it?
I don't think there would be too much benefit in asking the RIPE NCC to have a look. I think the main thing missing is sort of a set of clear objectives and then some resources to meet them. So I think if someone has enough interest, they can spend a few hours deciding what they want and propose it to the mailing list. And then either someone will come forward and help them with it, or they won't. And if they don't, then maybe I think it's appropriate to contact the RIPE NCC. I don't think it makes sense to just say, well, it seems like it's not very well maintained. Can you please have a look? So that's my feeling.
Andrei Roboshevsky, RIPE NCC. I think what we did in the past, and when we were requested to help making this R tool set more up to date and facilitate development in this area, we helped IEC to create this platform. And we still provide limited financial support, very limited, I must say, to maintain this platform. But this is only about the platform. So how Alive is working based on this platform depends very much on people that participate. And that's the substance of any open software project. So we're happy to provide the support for the platform, but I think it's up to the community to actually fill this with real activities.
Okay.
Rüdiger Falk again. Andrei, thanks to RIPE NCC for actually pushing and making the recent improvement. It cannot guarantee success. And Wilfried, I stepped up because what I'm seeing here is looking at the software. It's very complicated, it's very large, and an academic development that was using all kinds of interesting techniques and didn't include any documentation, so any maintainer is facing bad challenges. On the other hand, the overall functionality that is delivered is not necessarily used by all of the users, and there are competing other tools to evaluate RPSL databases that usually have much more limited functionality. And for my own purposes, my evaluation always was the alternates do not achieve the level of functionality that I need, but I need much less than IR toolset. So for having a really good software being maintained economically in the community, one of the problems I see is that, this is much too heavyweight a stone to carry around. And one of the things that I feel are somewhat missing also in that user community is that, well, okay, very little discussion happens of, well, okay, what are actually the functional requirements and the development requirements. So there might be a very good case for taking up a discussion of, well, okay, what kind of functionality and what kind of interface one would like to make progress with tools that are addressing this area. And may I remind you to a discussion yesterday where we were pointing out that doing interesting future work probably means we have to create some new tools for enabling the next security steps.
Yeah, but then this discussion should probably be in the routing working group. What's your feeling?
Well, we can take it there. My feeling is that the true routing guys usually do not really look into that kind of software stuff. But well, okay, it's hanging somewhere in between. Yeah. But the notion that it could be a very good idea to consider what requirements in this area are and how to address them, and well, okay, even in that context, to ask whether this may require an effort where the NCC can help in a defined way, I think would make some sense.
Okay, thanks, Rüdiger. Vesna.
Vesna Manojlovic, RIPE NCC, a trainer. RIPE NCC is in a way supporting IRR toolset by promoting the existence of it and increasing the user base in the routing registry training courses that we do. So for now, this is the main tool that we tell people, if you want to use the routing registry, there is rtconfig, and we are aware of existence of other tools. Often during those training courses, we tell people, did you ever try using this tool? And they say, yeah, but it didn't work. And then they go to the mailing list and they ask questions, ask for support. Sometimes they get it, sometimes they get more or less actively involved.
Okay, thanks for the feedback.
Volodymyr Yakovenko, Google. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the most common use of RL toolset nowadays is to get from something like RPSL language to list of prefixes in order to maintain your route filters. And there is an effort undergoing here at RIPE about certification. And somewhere in the future, we will get to the point when there will be old way to map prefix to autonomous system using route object. And there will be a new way to do so using certificates. And I think there should be some efforts, I don't know by whom, to ensure that when we approach this point, IRR toolset as basically the most widely known tools to generate route filters will support it.
Okay, thank you. Rüdiger?
Okay, one hint, Volodymyr, to you. For the long transition phase for getting the RPKI based stuff in, it has been observed that, well, okay, there are very simple and effective ways to make RPKI relevant data directly available within RPSL syntax and even semantics, so that, well, okay, maintaining and keeping an eye on the RPSL tools is actually a helpful thing there. And actually, for anybody who is interested for making quick progress in that area, of course, having a path where the existing tools can be directly used is looking like much more promising than to wait for a yet to be defined native set of tools.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So I think we collected quite a bit of information and we are going to see sort of where we have to do things in the future and how to do that. Okay, thanks for the feedback to everyone. That takes me to the next to last item, input from other working groups. We already started to talk about DNS-related stuff with the reverse server attribute being phased out. What we learned yesterday or the day before, in the first session of the DNS working group was that the RIPE NCC is currently updating or working on an update or working on an improvement on the system to automatically generate reverse DNS delegations, zones, name server configurations. And there are a couple of things that are related to that. For those of you who are not fully clued in, this is actually a machinery which allows us to request reverse delegations by registering a domain object into the RIPE database, and then on a regular basis, there is a robot which digests these objects and does the right thing, which means that the zone files are generated from that information, that name server configurations are automatically generated from that information. And it also provides for us a single point of requesting reverse delegations, even for those address blocks where the next upper layer DNS responsibility is not with the RIPE NCC, but for example with ARIN. And that machinery is going to be updated, and I would invite all of you to have a look at your experience with that machinery in the past, and if you had any issues with that, or if you do think there is room for improvement, then I think it's about the right point in time to provide your feedback. We have asked the RIPE NCC to come forward with a description of what they intend to do and how and what they want to achieve. And I presume that piece of information will be circulated both on the DNS working group mailing list and on the database working group mailing list. And we then have to decide where to have the discussion about those things. Peter?
Peter Koch, DNIC, and wearing my DNS working group co-chair hat here. Nothing what you said was wrong. Just let me add one additional perspective here. This is also about the cases where there is a reverse delegation object for /16 in the database, and people can now submit domain objects for subordinate /24s, and they do not receive a warning and nothing, but just their user experience, I love this, is bad, because of course when there is a delegation on a /16 boundary already, there is no way that the NCC could add the /24 delegation as well, because has been going somewhere else completely. And that has confused people. We have been in a situation being responsible for /16, actually migrating this out and getting rid of this. And especially in the transition phase, there was some confusion amongst users. And that was what Anand in the working group presented to the working group, and then proposed that there be a mechanism or some changes. And this is an action item to phrase this exactly, or make a come up with a proposal. That probably in these cases the /24 domain object should just be refused, or maybe a warning, but that is up for further discussion.
Okay, thanks, Peter. Andrei?
Yes, I just, Andrei Rabashevsky, RIPE NCC. I just wanted to second what just Peter said. That was a very particular point from the RIPE NCC that I would like to get some community feedback on. With regards to changes to our provisioning system, they indeed, at least what we are planning, is not as radical as it might sound. Basically, we're doing some cleanup and redesign of internal machinery while still keeping in mind that our database is a main provisioning interface. And you probably remember where this idea came from. It came from the fact that what we thought, we as a community, that database is a very familiar interface for people to work with, update their INET NUM objects and other stuff. So it's logical to extend the database functionality to cover DNS, reverse DNS provisioning. Now,
things are changing, of course, and we might think of different protocols and different ways to update this information, like EPP, like something different, not just database. But the scope of our activities is basically limited to redesign of internal machinery and also looking at the hardening our DNSSEC provisioning system. That's probably the main focus.
Yeah, thanks, Andre. Now, one of the reasons why I also brought it up here is because, for example, we don't have any means at the moment to tell the machinery from which master. Well, assuming the case that the RIPE-NCC name server is a slave for the reverse zone, we don't have any mechanisms right now to tell the machinery from which master to pull the zone from. And sort of if you are touching that anyway, it might be an opportunity to think about, do we need it? If we don't need it, then we don't have to take it into consideration. If anyone needs that, then it might be the right point in time to speak up. Because for us, it actually happened to us for one of our customers. And for the moment, the only solution was actually to not have a slave at RIPE-NCC because there is no way to actually convey the proper configuration information. But that's maybe just an exceptional case.
Anand Buddhadev, RIPE-NCC DNS Services Manager. I'd just like to clarify something there. It's true that at the moment there is no simple way for an end user to specify which master server to pull the zones from. We have had a couple of requests for this from users, and we've made manual edits to our configuration to allow for this. So, you know, it's possible, it's not impossible, but it's not easy for us to maintain because it's, you know, manual work and something that could easily be overlooked by an engineer, for example. So yes, we would very much like the community to consider, allowing changes to the RIPE database schema for domain objects to allow this this feature. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Anand. That's about it, I think. If there is no other input to that topic, it gets us to any other business. Is there any other business? Anyone you want to bring up here? No? So then I think we can close the working group sessions right now. Being early this time, so you're going to have a longer break. Thank you. See you next meeting.